The following is a TTJ special presentation. Please stay tuned to the end of the episode for an important call to action. This is an urgent call to action by the Tech Juggernaut at ttjtech.net. During this podcast, we will attempt to explain to you the issue of concern, and then we will provide information on important steps you can take. Truly a call to action. I'm Matt Volbrecht of the Tech Juggernaut, and this is so important. Folks, you have no idea what is at stake here and how critical it is that we act and act now. And so, my friends, I thank you for tuning in. And I ask you to please do me a favor and don't tune out, but listen to this entire episode and take action. And don't forget to visit ttjtech.net. I'd like to begin today what I know is a very unusual episode of TTJ Talk, as evidenced by numerous things, including very different theme music, etc., with a story. Now, first off, know that we are all well, healthy, safe, happy, praise God. We are all doing well, my family and I. Nothing about that, okay? But this is so important, my friends. I cannot stress it enough. And so I'd like to tell you a story about a man named Paul. Paul said this: I wanted to build an app in one night, not tell a single person about it, and run some experiments on it to see if I could get it to some level of success. Now, Paul spent 6 hours building a fitness app. Now, the app was based on a short workout program that Paul was familiar with, and he said, really, it wasn't much. It was 12 exercises with descriptions and a timer that used voice prompts to guide its users. Initially, the app had limited success. But then Apple introduced something called HealthKit. HealthKit allowed fitness and activity tracking and other health-related apps to be integrated more directly to communicate with other apps and to provide information in a single place where users could access it and could take action because of it. Now, I don't want to give you the mistaken impression that HealthKit immediately changed everything for Paul, because there were still some setbacks, still some flat sales, and even some struggles when HealthKit experienced some bugs and the app was pulled for a while. But eventually, the app garnered incredible praise, and Paul experienced tremendous success, making over $72,000 on an app that he built in less than half a day. Now, you might think that perhaps Paul's story is rather unique and that it is not very common, sort of like the elusive singer who, on the first day she sings, gets discovered, or like the basketball player who, after just a few shots, has the opportunity to meet Michael Jordan. You may think that it's rare. In reality, it is not rare at all. It is extremely common. Now, I'm not saying that every app ever made is successful. I'm not saying there's any kind of guarantee that your app will be successful, but then in the industry, in the world, where is there really a guarantee in any kind of business? But what I can tell you is that hundreds, no, thousands of people, probably more, have had their lives altered forever for the good because of something called the App Store. Paul is not the only success story. There have been 8-year-old developers. There have been developers who are blind or visually impaired. There have been teenagers. There have been folks from broken homes. Folks from countries where a hot meal on the table every day is not a sure thing. Folks from our great country of the United States of America. From families where a hot meal on the table every day is not a guaranteed thing. And these folks have had their lives forever changed. They have become successful. They have experienced tremendous growth. They have experienced tremendous financial prosperity. And they've been able to change their lives and make something of themselves because of the App Store. And yet, in spite of all of that, there is a huge push right now in the government of the United States of America to alter the way the App Store functions, perhaps to even bring it to a point of not existing as we know it, or existing but with drastic overhauls mandated by the government. Yes. The government of the United States, at least some in the government, are convinced that the practices of Apple, and not just Apple, but several other so-called big tech companies like Google, Amazon, and Facebook, are using anti-competitive practices and underhanded tactics to, as they say, crush the competition and block innovation. I need your help, my friends. The tech community and the world needs your help. And while you may think it's a bit overly dramatic for me to say it that way, I mean it with 1,000% certainty, and I am prepared to go to the front lines for this because this is urgent. As I said, at the end of this podcast episode, there will be a call to action. If you agree with me, if you care at all about the use of your Apple devices, your iPhone, your iPad, if you care at all about the quality of your apps, if you care at all about people like Paul and young kids and people from broken homes having the chance to be successful at something like this, then you need to please do me this favor. Some of you know me. Some of you know I would personally never, I've never done anything like this in my life. Ever. This is serious business. A man by the name of Congressman David Cicilline of Rhode Island has launched an official antitrust hearing against Apple, Google, Facebook, and Amazon to investigate their practices to determine whether they are indeed anti-competitive. And he was interviewed just this past week by Bloomberg saying, and I quote, "I found some deeply disturbing behavior." He really uses the phrase crush the competition. He really believes that's what the tactics of these companies are doing. And he has indicated that he is prepared to make recommendations as early as next month. Now, of course, just because Congressman Cicilline and his compatriots make recommendations, that does not mean they automatically get what they want. There has to be a lot of talking, a lot of discussion. He plans to work with Republicans. He is a member of the Democratic Party. He plans to work with Republicans to try to find common ground. We know that hardly ever happens in politics. However, if this were to go through and become a bill and potentially a law, it could have drastic implications. Now, some of the more drastic ones are forcing Apple and companies like Apple to open up their platform to allow developers from anywhere to submit apps in any manner they so choose, ignoring the current App Store rules and guidelines, but just submitting apps on a free and open market where anyone can submit apps and you can download apps from anywhere. Why is that so bad? Free and open market. We like those terms. Why is that so bad? Well, please stay tuned. I'm gonna illustrate it all for you. But that is one very real, though admittedly far-fetched, possibility. Another perhaps rather far-fetched but more likely possibility is the creation of, again, to borrow from Congressman Cicilline's words, a Glass-Steagall for tech companies. Now, for those who are not familiar with Glass-Steagall, Glass-St, I believe it's Eagall, if I'm not mistaken, I'll put it on the blog. So you, if I spelled it wrong, I apologize. If you're not familiar with Glass-Steagall, don't worry. Neither was I, other than to know that it had to do with investment and banking and things of that nature. And my understanding is that to apply that to tech companies would mean that now companies who own a platform, like Apple and its app store, for example, would not be permitted to compete on that same platform. That they would have to either forgo those apps or that they would have to somehow be broken up into multiple entities so that a different entity could submit apps to the. I don't know how that plays out exactly. I've not had the honor of meeting the congressman yet to talk with him about this, though I want to, because I want to understand it better, so I'm not talking out of ignorance here. But it is made very clear that a sort of Glass-Steagall for tech companies would indeed result in the what I said, someone who owns a platform not being permitted to compete on that same platform. And to make matters worse, this has become manifested as more and more companies recently have become emboldened. Companies like Epic Games, a multi-billion dollar company who calls Apple Big Brother, a multi-billion dollar company who calls Apple Big Brother because Apple will not allow Epic to use its own direct payment method and still remain on the App Store. Companies like Spotify, who, in my personal humble opinion, have nothing to complain about because Spotify doesn't make a piece of hardware. They don't make a phone. There is no Spotify tablet. And so the only thing that they can do is exist on other people's platforms. And they've been doing that just swimmingly. And Spotify is integrated with Siri as of iOS 13. It's possible to delete. We're going to get into all this, but it's possible to delete your music app and use only Spotify. And in iOS 14, you're even going to be able to change the default music source on your HomePod. What do these companies have to complain about? In my opinion, Apple is bending over backwards for companies like Spotify, perhaps because of pressure, but for whatever reason it may be, they are doing that. And it's still not enough. What does Epic want? Epic wants the 30% kickback, if you want to call it that, the 30% of in-app subscriptions that goes to Apple to be waived. They want that to be lowered, reduced, or not have to pay it at all. They want to be permitted to do what Epic did and create their own direct payment method, thus circumventing Apple's payment system, which was put there for our protection, but again, I'm getting ahead of myself. That's what they want. And most recently, Facebook has come to the forefront once again by saying that Apple's App Store practices and policies squash or block innovation and competition. I will be completely honest with you. I cannot. You might as well tell me that the sky is hot pink, or that a donut is triangular. I can't sympathize with that statement at all. that the App Store and Apple's practices regarding the App Store block innovation and competition. My friends, there are over close to 2.5 million apps on the App Store. And what I'm going to show you in the next few minutes in this episode is that if we change the platform, creating some sort of a Glass-Steagall for tech, or opening up the platform to not require in-app payments through Apple and similar companies, we are going to be the ones harming innovation, harming the competition, and harming consumers. I am convinced that folks who are very well-intended in the government, very, very smart, very great, wonderful, fantastic people who truly are doing what they believe is best, I am convinced that they have been misled. They've been misled by companies like Epic, Spotify, and Facebook, who have an axe to grind, perhaps. For example, Facebook became very vocal after an app was rejected multiple times by Apple. Now, it's easy to go to a desperate consumer who wants that app and to say, my app was rejected by Big Brother. Poor me. But if you look at the reasoning behind why Facebook's app was rejected, and it's not the main Facebook app, and it's not Messenger, by the way. It's something else. It doesn't matter. The reason that app was rejected is because, once again, it tried to implement its own direct access to its own store, an alternative store within an app that would have to function on an iOS device. Apple doesn't want that. Why does Apple not want that? What reasons can you think of? I'll wait. No, I won't. I'll tell you the answer. And it is not because they don't want innovation. It is not because they don't like competition. It is because if you create a direct store, an alternative store inside an app, and then require the company like Apple to approve that app, you have now created the ability for customers to download and install other apps within that app that Apple has not vetted. And now, this amazing platform that Apple has created, that Apple has worked so hard to maintain with a tremendous level of excellence that is just not seen or heard of typically in the industry, now all of that is in jeopardy by an app you did not vet. And that, my friends, whether you like it or not, is the reason that Apple rejected the Facebook gaming app. Now, I could go off on all of these tangents and on little soapboxes, but I need to stick to my points. And I have several points that I'd like to make for you. I'd like to share with you why I believe that, number one, companies like Apple, Google, Amazon, and so on, why I believe they are not using anti-competitive practices. And secondly, I'd like to demonstrate for you today, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that opening up the platforms or breaking up the companies or creating a Glass-Steagall for tech would be not only detrimental, but would potentially be one of the worst mistakes to ever impact tech users, developers, and the entire tech community in history. Now, before I get into my short but important presentation, I want to give you a couple of general numbers to consider. Starting with one I've already shared with you today. As I said, there are over closer to 2.5 billion apps on Apple's App Store. With Google, it's closer to 3 billion. Million. I'm sorry about that. It's million. It's not billion. Okay, but it's still a large number. I apologize. There are over 2 million apps on the App Store. I was still thinking about Epic's multi-billion dollar valuation. There are something like two. It was back in late winter. It was like 2.2 million apps on the App Store. And with Google, it was something like 2.8 million. Now, again, Apple's not the only ones under fire here. It's also Google, Facebook, and Amazon. But I'm going to focus primarily on Apple because I'm an Apple guy. I do Apple stuff all the time. That's what we focus on here at TTJ. And I do believe Apple's doing it better than anybody else, okay? But I also do have a tremendous respect for these other companies, and I'm going to speak to them when I need to on occasion. But we're going to focus primarily on Apple. So let's start with this number, now that I got it right. I apologize, I had it incorrect before. There are over 2 million, closer to 2.5 million apps on the Apple App Store for iPhone, iPad, iPod Touch, and so forth. And then there are TV apps for tvOS, watchOS apps, and so on. And there are, and some of those are the same, in fairness, okay? They're not, you know, totally separate. And then there are closer to 3 million apps on the Google Play Store, okay? Again, right then and there, I kind of have a problem with the whole they block innovation comment or anything that resembles it, because how can you tell me that a store who has permitted over 2 million apps to enter its marketplace legally is crushing competition? So that's number one. The number two thing that I'd like to share with you about those apps, and this one, my friends, I think really will astonish you. 47%. I don't have to tell you, that's almost half. 47% of mobile app developers work alone. People just like Paul from our story. And even the ones that don't, even among the ones that don't, only 8% work in or work for a company with more than 20 employees. So companies that are large, getting a better shake, a better shot than companies that are small or harm to the consumer because of Apple's practices. This is just complete nonsense. 47% of them work alone. The App Store is perhaps, according to this 2016 State of Mobile Apps study, is perhaps one of the most entrepreneur-friendly industries in existence today. Now, with that said, I want to go to some very, very specific points. I will have these talking points available as an Apple Keynote document presentation or as a PDF, whichever you'd prefer, upon request. And you can get a link to it. You can share it. You can send it to your congressmen and your senators. And my friends, I hope that you will. And we're going to talk more about that shortly. Now, before I talk to you specifically about the issue at hand, I want to talk briefly, very briefly, about technology and why it is so different from just about anything else this world knows, any other industry. Because part of the problem is we are trying, I believe, to use metrics and regulations and so on that really should not be applied to companies like this. And I know that no one is above the law, but we have all seen cases in which the law needs to be updated. And I believe tech is one of those companies, is one of those industries. First of all, people have very, very specific reasons for using their technology, and they come from a variety of backgrounds, right? So I can't look at a car, an automobile manufacturer, or a company who maybe makes a television or something like that. Because with the technology, there could be 2-year-olds using this technology. And in an ideal world, those 2-year-olds are with their parents, with their siblings, and there is a close watch, a close eye being kept on them. But not everything about this world is ideal. Now, some people use the technology for their businesses, to communicate with family abroad, to teach and learn, to express themselves. And for a lot of people, perhaps especially folks like me who are totally blind or visually impaired in some way, this technology truly can be a lifeline, giving us directions, access to important phone calls and messages and alerts, allowing us to interact in the same way that our sighted family, friends, and colleagues do. Now, I'd also like to point out that there are numerous risks in the tech world that don't exist anywhere else. Risks like viruses, spamware, malware, ransomware, identity theft. All of these things that we have had to accept when we use technology. But anything we can do to minimize that risk would seem like the only humane, the only decent, the only ethical thing to do. And we are seeing that risk being mitigated and managed by companies like Apple due to, not in spite of, but because of the tight level of control and the high standard of excellence that they maintain. People don't want to have to worry about their technology. You know, technology was pretty much a given already in the 90s, but most people didn't like it. Most people, in fact, hated it. And let me give you some possible reasons why. Do any of these terms ring a bell? Fatal exception error, general protection fault, this program has performed an illegal operation, and a whole lot more. How about these? Disk defragmentation, DLL files. No user should ever have to know about that or worry about it. And yet it was the way for the longest time. And it was companies like Apple who raised the bar, who made everybody realize we can do better. This is not good enough. And one of the reasons they're able to do that and maintain that is because of the walled garden approach of the App Store. In the 90s and early part of the 21st century, it was 90% of the cost of a PC was not the upfront cost, but rather the cost of ownership. And a Gartner research study said that 98% of the problems we had were software related and caused by software. Now think about that the next time you question why the App Store functions the way that it does. And finally, before we move on, let me say that people expect certain things immediately on day one, right out of the gate from their tech. They don't want to compromise on what they consider the essentials. And the essentials are not defined like you define essential in other things. They're defined as the ability to be able to play music on your phone on day one. The ability to be able to take, send, edit, share photos and videos, the ability to send and receive email, manage a calendar, contacts, notes, reminders, be able to get directions with maps turn by turn, be able to create simple voice recordings, to be able to watch movies and shows. This is what people consider essential on their phones. And if a phone were unable to do these things, it would be considered subpar, and well, it should. Think back to the 90s when people got upset that Microsoft was including Internet Explorer on its Windows PCs. I am going to tell you something that I rarely say. Microsoft was dealt an unfair hand. They were not in the wrong. And today, any computer or any kind of internet-capable device that did not ship with a web browser would be laughed right out of the industry. And well, it should be. Because the idea that we would expect consumers to have to deal with that is ludicrous. We need to redefine what matters, and we need to see that technology deserves not a different set of rules, not the ability to break the law, but standards that take into account the uniqueness of what it is. If technology does not get the opportunity to be the unique, rare gem that it is, then it has no reason for being. Now, I'd like to tell you, I believe the problem here, as I said earlier, is that we've heard two sides. We've heard from Apple, Google, Facebook, and Amazon, and of course, they're going to defend their own position. Remember, I do not work for Apple. Apple doesn't even know I'm doing this. I'm not paid by Apple. I have nothing to do with Apple other than I'm a user of their products, and I teach their products. I don't work for them. They're not endorsing this. They haven't asked me to do any of this, and I'm not getting anything from them by doing it. But you've never heard from me. I don't mean that in an arrogant way. Okay, I give all the glory to God. What I mean is you've never heard from the consumer. You've heard from Apple, Google, Facebook, and Amazon, who are, of course, going to defend their platform to the hilt. And well, they should. And you've heard from the companies who have a very targeted agenda. Companies like Epic Games, Spotify, and Facebook with perhaps an axe to grind. And isn't it funny that Facebook is on both sides of the fence here? Complaining, and also being the one complained about. That should tell you that something is amiss. But we need to talk to the people who are impacted by this, the customers. Why don't you bring some people in? And so that's what I'd like to do, is give a voice to that. Now, if you hear some noise in the background, it is my speech program as I'm advancing to the next slide in my keynote so that I may see what I'd like to share and not forget anything, okay? I want to tell you that in spite of what you think, in spite of what you might have been told, users really do have a choice. This is not a matter of anti-competitive practices. It is not an issue worthy of an antitrust investigation. Users have a choice. I'm about to demonstrate to you that big tech, as you like to call it, does not crush the competition. First of all, you know, I mentioned to you earlier that you can use Spotify, and I want to go back to that topic for a second, because Spotify is one of the folks complaining about the current model. I personally think Apple Music is the best platform for listening to music on an Apple device. I believe there is none better, and I use it every day. I am a very proud holder of an Apple Music family membership that I pay for every single month without hesitation. But I want to tell you that I know plenty of people who use Spotify. I know other folks who use Amazon Music. I know other folks who use Google Play Music, or is it called YouTube Premium now that has the music feature in it? I'm sorry, Google. I'm not trying to be disrespectful to you. I just can't remember what name we're going by now. I know people who use Pandora Premium. The point I'm trying to make is Apple is not forcing them to use Apple Music, and there is no limitation on what they're able to do in those other music platforms. They like those music platforms every bit as much as I like Apple Music. And while I don't agree with their choice, they have the right to make it. And Apple has given them the right to make it. And Google has given them the right to make it. And Amazon gives you the right to make it. And music is not the only example. You can install Google Gmail, the Gmail app, and never open Apple Mail. Or if you're an Android user, you could install, and an iOS user, you could install Microsoft Outlook and never open the Apple Mail or the Google Mail apps. Do me a favor. If you've got an iPhone or an iPad near you, and you can do it without being distracted from what I'm saying, otherwise do it later, go to your app store and search the word email and tell me how many search results you get from email. Now, let's take it a step farther. How many search results do you get from apps and companies that you have never heard of before? So yeah, the big names are there as direct competition to Apple Mail, like Gmail from Google, Yahoo Mail, Microsoft Outlook. But then there's small ones, or at least small to me, maybe obscure is a better term for it. Apps like Edison Mail, Spark Mail by Riedel, all of these and tons more that I can't even remember the names of now. And that's just one more of dozens, maybe hundreds of examples. You can use Evernote instead of Apple Notes. You can use Fantastical, Day One for agendas. You don't have to use the Apple Calendar. Again, you can use Google Calendar. You can use calendars made by companies we have never even heard of. There are two, remember, over, I got the number wrong before, but I'm on top of it now, over 2 million apps. Many of them from large companies, many of them from companies you've never heard of, in hundreds of categories, and they're paying, they're earning app developers literally billions of dollars. These app developers are not suffering. Again, creating an app is not a guarantee that you're going to become a millionaire, just as becoming, getting a teaching degree is not guaranteed that you're going to get a job on day one, or being a great singer or a great athlete is not a guarantee that you're going to be a famous musician or a famous sports star. But the point is, it is as easy as anything else, perhaps easier than some industries, to break into. And as you're going to see shortly, the go-to-market strategy is incredible. Apple does not reject apps because of the nature of what they do. In other words, if you submit a calendar app, a music app, a notes app, an email app, a web browser app to Apple, they don't say, oops, we already got Safari, no web browser app for you, can't develop it. Oh, we already got email, reject that. They don't do that. I've got to believe Apple realizes that their web browser, their email client, their music app, their calendar is the best in the industry. But they want competition, else they never would have created the App Store. From its foundation, the App Store was designed to foster creativity and innovation and encourage competition, my friends. That's why it exists. And that's why, to this day, Apple continues to approve new apps and new updates of the same apps that are direct competition to the software and to the services that it provides. Apple will never force you to use one of their apps instead of another one. And as a matter of fact, in iOS 14 being released probably sometime this fall, you're going to be able to change your default web browser from Safari to other apps if you want to. You're going to be able to change your default mail client from Apple Mail to others if you want to. And as I've already mentioned on the HomePod, you're even going to be able to change your default music source from Apple Music to things like Spotify and more. And so when you say, play Kokomo by the Beach Boys, it will play on whatever source you want it to play on. It is even possible to delete first-party apps. In other words, Apple apps from an Apple device. You can delete the first-party apps. You don't even have to have them on your device. And in their places, if you want to, you can install something from a third-party developer. So, for example, you can delete the Apple Music app entirely and install Spotify, Google Play, and YouTube Music and Amazon Music. You can delete Apple Mail and you could install Gmail, Outlook, Edison Mail, and Spark Mail. You could delete Safari and install Google Chrome or Opera or one of these other ones. You could delete, you get the point, okay? Apple Maps, I put that one in here. You could use Google Maps, Waypoint GPS, AT&T Navigator. There are tons and tons and tons of options, and none of them very difficult to do and to implement. There's no crushing of the competition here. If anything, It is the competition that Apple has sought out by allowing such apps on the App Store. And not only that, they even promote these apps. You will see featured articles, featured app stories, page after page of category highlights and featured apps. And what will be right at the top of those apps? Apps like Google Maps, Gmail, Google Classroom, and YouTube. This is not the behavior of a company who is engaging in anti-competitive practices. But let's talk about something we have not very significantly addressed yet today. Let's talk about App Store fees, the real sticking point for a lot of these companies who are indeed complaining right now. Apple receives 30% of everything that goes through the App Store. And so if you put an app on the App Store and that app costs $2.99 or $100, Apple gets 30% of it. And if you decide you want to have in-app purchases like subscriptions, game currency, and more, if it's going to happen through the app, it means it's gonna be an in-app purchase using Apple's payment mechanisms. And guess what? Apple gets 30% of that too, at least at first. Now, in a lot of subscription cases, it's possible to have that reduced after the first year. But again, this is not the important part that I want to get into. I want to tell you why these App Store fees not only are important, but why they're essential. And by the way, let me be very clear about something. This is pretty much industry standard. Epic Games launching a major, major anti-App Store campaign recently, so-called hashtag Free Fortnite. They themselves charge a fee for people in the right conditions and under the right circumstances. So they're not doing anything differently. Now, why do these fees matter? In order to answer that question, we have to look at what developers are getting by being able to be on the App Store. And let me just say this right from the beginning, my friends. There are numerous apps that I genuinely believe would not even exist if it were not for the App Store. I don't want to call out specific names because I don't want people to get mad at me, but I'm telling you, there are numerous apps that I use, apps that I like, that would not exist were it not for the App Store, because the App Store gave them a platform. The App Store provides you with the tools, the developer tools that you get, access to Apple's frameworks and application programming interfaces or APIs, meaning if I want to create an app that plays and streams music, Apple has already created an API for me, so I don't have to reinvent the wheel. I can implement a low-level control, a music API, and all of a sudden, my play button, my pause button, my rewind and fast forward, my seek sliders, all of these things just work because of APIs and developer tools that Apple has given to me. Now, this also increases reliability, uptime, and functionality because, again, the wheel does not have to be reinvented. And as long as I follow Apple's standard guidelines, everything just works. This is also and especially important to me as a visually impaired user when it comes to accessibility. In case you don't know, Apple, this company who apparently some of you think is just monstrous, has gone out of its way at no charge to include accessibility features in every single product that they make. Wow, the monsters. Now, these accessibility features, like the VoiceOver screen reader, are literally what make it possible for me to use these devices and not have to pay $1,000 extra on assistive technology. And you know what the great thing about VoiceOver is? When an app developer creates an app, if they'll just follow Apple's guidelines for accessibility, most of the time that app is going to work with VoiceOver. Of course, there are some weird exceptions, really, really graphically rich games, but in general, an app, if you follow the developer's guidelines, will work with VoiceOver. Numerous times over the years, I have emailed developers thanking them for implementing VoiceOver support. And more than half of the time, I've gotten the following reply or something similar to it. We appreciate the feedback. We never even gave VoiceOver a thought. We are embarrassed to admit, but we lucked into it because we just followed Apple's instructions. And here's another reply I've gotten when I've emailed companies saying, your app does not work with VoiceOver. Could you please consider implementing it? Almost every time, whether in a week or in a year, I get an email back saying, try it now. It was so easy for us to implement. Apple makes this possible by providing tools, by providing APIs, APIs for audio, background audio, app switching, music playback, security and privacy, accessibility, power management, and a whole lot more. Not only that, but App Store placement is a much better shot at exposure than you having to do it yourself, because Apple features different apps. And as Apple features different apps, more people get to know them. And not only that, not only the curated ones, but the sheer act of downloading and giving positive reviews to an app automatically forces it up to a higher place, a higher placement in the App Store. I wrote a book and put it on the Apple Books Store now. And just because enough people started reading it and giving it good ratings, before you know it, it was literally the first search result in the list. And even 8 years later, after I've written that book, that is still within the first 10 results that comes up. Do you know how much I paid Apple for that? Nothing. Not a penny. And because I elected to make the book free, I don't even pay Apple any sales revenue. And if I did decide to charge for that app, I would happily give Apple 30% of every purchase, because they are doing the heavy lifting. They have made it possible for anybody to develop. They've created an environment that promotes innovation, not stifles it. They have given us the tools, the support. Do you know the first time I submitted my book to them, it was rejected because of some errors. They helped me to correct them. They told me what I needed to do. I did it, and the book was accepted. This is the way a company who cares about people works, not a company who's trying to squash in the competition or block innovation. We need to hear these stories. We've got to get this in our minds, because we have been snowballed, my friends. We've been misled. And it's time we take the reins and get this thing out in the open before it's too late. Now, I also want to point out a little more about the go-to-market strategy. And I just want to give you a practical example here. Do you know that it costs $99 a year to be part of Apple's developer program? And once you do that, you can develop apps and submit anything you want. And then you just have that 30%. Now, you can launch promos and ad campaigns and do all sorts of things, build your own website, all those things if you want to do that. But you don't have to. I have used more than one app that has no website. They have a Twitter feed, or they have an email address @gmail.com. And they don't have their own domain or anything yet. Eventually they get it. You know, Paul from our story before was eventually, his app was bought by a fitness company who makes connected sensors. I mean, it's a fairy tale ending. That can happen, but it doesn't have to start there. The go-to-market strategy is as easy as submitting your app to Apple. They put it on the App Store for you. They handle the placement. And as people use the app, it moves up. Compare this to what you'd have to do if the App Store didn't exist. You would be responsible for every aspect of the marketing. You would be responsible for getting a server or paying for server space to host your app. And it could not be one of these simple $2 or $3 a month hosting plans, my friends, because you need this to be reliable 100% of the time for the masses all around the world, which the App Store automatically guarantees for you. If you're doing it yourself, you are going to spend hundreds of dollars a month on your own domain, on your own website, on your own domain email, and on your own server. all these things combined, or a paid server that is dedicated for you so that it has the wherewithal to support what it is that you're trying to do. And that is just getting the app up there for people to access. That does not include accepting credit card payments so that people can indeed purchase the app from you, so that you actually can make money. That doesn't include an in-app purchase mechanism or a website on which to purchase things. That does not, my friends, include marketing at all. We haven't even begun to talk about search engine placement, marketing, or anything of the sort. Thousands of dollars a month you would spend to have a small shot at making it. By comparison, $99 a year to guarantee you the right to have your app in the App Store and to start generating revenue and success. Again, you are seeing, I hope, this company and companies like it are doing the exact opposite of anti-competitive practices. They are making it possible for you to innovate, for you to do what you love and worry only about that, and not have to worry about what SEO means and AdWords and marketing strategies, or have to hire someone or get venture capital or business. No, they are making it possible for you to focus on what you're passionate about and creating that thing, and they handle the rest. My friends, if this is anti-competitive, then someone needs to get me a dictionary, because I am at a loss. Now, we've talked a lot about how these app store guidelines and the in-app purchase mechanism, how this actually is helping developers. But I want to talk now about how it's helping consumers. And it's a lot of the same reasons that we shared earlier, the guaranteed reliability and functionality, because Apple will not approve an app that doesn't do what it says that it's going to do and that doesn't function. And so not only does it eliminate sloppy apps, but it also eliminates malicious apps. Is it perfect? No. Have there ever been mistakes made? Absolutely. But when and if they are made, they can be weeded out very, very quickly. The App Store guarantees that kind of functionality, that kind of reliability, and the kind of accessibility that we talked about a few moments ago. It also makes it easy for families to share apps with features like family sharing. It makes it possible for people to have a unified place to go for parental controls like Apple's Ask to Buy feature. Do you know what happened when Epic, for about a day and a half, was able to circumvent Apple's App Store policies? They also circumvented Apple's parental controls. My daughter came to me saying, "Daddy, V-Bucks are on sale. May I have some?" I said, "Yes, how many do you want?" And we agreed upon a number that would not break the bank, but that would not disappoint my daughter. I was waiting patiently for her ask to buy request to pop up on my screen, because as responsible and trustworthy as she is, she's still 8. And so I was waiting for that notification that says, "Kylie wants to buy X number of V-Bucks. Do you want to approve or decline, or just let it sit there?" And of course, I would have said approve, because we had already discussed it, as we always do. But the message never came. Finally, wondering what was taking her so long, figuring that she'd be anxious to do this, I said to her, "Kylie, why didn't you send me the request yet?" She said, "I didn't have to. I already got the V-Bucks." What happened here, my friends? It didn't take me long to figure out exactly what had happened. By implementing their own direct payment system, they totally got around Apple's ask to buy. This loophole is something they knew about. And I submit to you, they didn't care. They were more concerned about making a statement. But the point of this podcast is not to down Epic Games. The point of this podcast is to show you the risks associated with going out on your own, that is a perfect example of it. And that doesn't even get into virus potential, privacy concerns and security risks, apps that are harvesting your data. Do you know that Apple makes all the privacy policies transparent, immediately available? They force app developers or require app developers to use age ratings so that you know whether an app is appropriate for your 5-year-old child, or does it have references to things you might not approve of, like sex, drugs, or alcohol? Does it have profanity? These things have to be put front and center on the app page for every app in the App Store. Now, where's that information going to be if the app developer doesn't have to answer to Apple? More importantly, who's going to make sure that app developers are doing it? And the answer is, you know the answer, no one. There's not going to be one single buck stops here situation anymore. See, now, if somebody violates a term or if there is something that's inappropriate, Apple can immediately take action. They're not going to be able to do that if developers are allowed to go out on their own. Now, I want to also say to you that another part of this guarantee is that with the App Store, there's a community where people can see each other's ratings and reviews and stay away from bad apps or let other people know. And eventually, Apple will see these issues and will be able to step in and perhaps help the developer to improve its app. There's a guaranteed process for all of this. And so this is another important factor when you're thinking about what Apple's motives and companies like Apple's, what their motives really are here. I can assure you they are not blocking innovation. They are providing a unified, secure experience. Imagine if a school district built a playground and then let any random vendor come in and put their own rides. No, that's not acceptable. That kind of behavior isn't acceptable really anywhere else. Why should it be for technology? Now, I want to talk more about the payments. And I want to tell you why additional payment channels would actually be harmful to consumers. What you have right now, this in-app purchase mechanism that is loved by some and despised by others and is the subject of this antitrust hearing and much controversy, this 30% that goes to Apple because they're required to use Apple's in-app payment system, this ensures so many things to me as a consumer and so many things to a developer. Again, for the developers, it ensures easy conversion. As a developer, you don't have to create complicated scripts. You don't have to go through other payment gateways and set up various keys and purchasing processes. No, all of this happens through a consistent interface for the developer and a consistent interface for the user. So in every single app, if I want an in-app purchase, I know exactly where to go to get it and how it's going to function. I know how it's going to be built with subscriptions. I know exactly when to expect their billing, and I know how to cancel them because I don't have to wait on or trust in an individual app developer's own cancellation policies. Nope, there is a standard means by which to cancel your subscriptions, and it's done through Apple, and Apple takes care of the rest. Do you know There was an app that used a separate website to process its payments at first, and it was not very successful. I was having some issues with the app. Do you know that because the app developer, and I don't even believe, by the way, that the app developer was being malicious in this case, although this does weed out malicious apps taking your money as well and not doing with it what they say, but I don't even believe that was the case with this app. I believe that the gentleman had gone through something that was no fault of his own. I don't know whether he was sick or in the hospital or what the case may be. My prayers were with him. But do you know that it took me 3 months to cancel my service? 3 extra months I was getting billed and could not do anything about it because I reached out to him and reached out to him and reached out to him, and I could not get a response. Finally, he responded very apologetically and took care of what needed to be taken care of. The second go-around with this same developer, I tried the app again later, and it worked for me for a while, and then I decided it just still wasn't going to meet my needs. But there was one major difference. This time, that app developer had implemented the in-app purchase. I got his subscription through the App Store. When I decided I no longer wanted it, I followed Apple's standard procedures for canceling an app subscription. Do you know how many extra months I was billed? Zero. Do you know how quickly the subscription was canceled? Instantly. The moment I expected it to, the way it was supposed to be. This, my friends, is because Apple, not a third-party developer, had created a consistent interface for canceling that subscription. And not only does this create a consistent interface for canceling subscriptions, it also creates a standard, consistent interface for refunds. If you have a problem with an app that you cannot get worked out with the developer and you require a refund, all you have to do is chat with Apple iTunes Store support, and they issue the refund with consistent practices that apply the same to everybody. Apple is the go-between in cases where our busy lives really do prevent us sometimes, or make less desirable for us to have to deal with developers and deal with other people's cancellation policies and potential similar factors. With one company handling all of this, it truly is the best possible scenario for consumers and for developers, not having to pay hundreds of dollars to get their payment system set up and accept credit cards and all this, but rather who can just rely on Apple's system to do it. It truly is the best option for developers as well. And so I focused a lot so far on let's not open up the platform, but now I'm really focusing on let's not do away with the payment system as it currently is, because it's needed. Because doing away with it would cause a terrible, sloppy anarchy of policies, developers, and payment systems, and we'd never have a consistent experience. This would drastically affect adoption of apps. It would drastically affect conversion to sales. It would drastically affect users. It is not the right answer. Now, you know, when you go through iTunes Store billing, the in-app purchase method and the mechanism of Apple's payment system, you also have consistent billing. And you don't have to have multiple charges on your credit card from different companies. I would much, much rather get all my charges from one place. Why? Not only because they're coming from one place, but let's just say I subscribe to 5 different services. You can pick your what they are. I don't care. Hulu, Disney Plus, New York Times, whatever. You pick them. I actually subscribe to more than 5, but let's just settle at 5. Now, inevitably, I'm going to need a new credit card. At least every few years after the expiration date of the card. And that's not considering the possible risks that I've lost a credit card or that for some reason they decide I need one sooner, which has happened. When I get my new credit card, do you know what I have to do? I have to call or go on the websites of 5 different companies now to change that credit card billing information. Very annoying. Do you know how many times I have to change it if it's billed through Apple? once. Whether I have 5 or 500 subscriptions, they will automatically be put on the correct payment method if I've changed it just one time. Now, I want to be clear. Apple doesn't object in all cases to people doing their own billing. Think about Netflix. Netflix does not accept in-app subscriptions. You have to go to Netflix.com to subscribe. And there are other companies. And then there are even companies like Hulu, who do indeed offer most of their plans through the App Store billing, but who also offer alternative methods for you to purchase that same package on their website. So Apple is not opposed to this. Also, that the fact that Apple is the liaison, is the go-between, does not stop you from interacting directly with developers. And in many cases, Apple even encourages it. You can contact developers anytime you want. Again, the App Store makes that easier because it provides the web address, the support information, all the things you need. But you can contact, go out on your own and contact any developer you want to contact. And companies like this, we have to still create accounts. You know, I used to do let me give you a perfect example. Hulu. Hulu is billed through the iTunes store for me, but when I need something from Hulu, I can still call Hulu or email them or get support from them. And I have a Hulu account. And when Hulu wants to promote something to me, they can email me directly. They don't have to get permission from Apple to email me, because the very first thing that happened when I set up my Hulu account, even though the payment went through Apple, was I need you to now enter your name and email address and date of birth and gender and tell me what you like, because I'm going to send you promotional material that you will like. You see, this is Apple caring about developers and consumers. You know, the whole reason the in-app purchases were created was to help developers to continue to generate revenue even after the initial purchase price of their app. You think consumers wanted 500 gems for $9? No, they didn't want that. But that is what the companies were going to do regardless. And so Apple came up with a way to make it successful, and they came up with the ability to disable in-app purchases for those people who don't want them. How are we going to do that, my friends? One payment mechanism means one toggle switch disables and restricts in-app purchases all together. And again, it's Apple who handles the back end of it now, not each individual company, not each individual consumer. Come on, folks. Let's wake up a little. Moving on, I'd like to go on to my next slide, which, as you'll see in a second, I'm going to tell you, talks about the fact that we need first-party apps, or as I like to say it, your iPhone is not a garage. The purpose of this slide is to stress to you why a Glass-Steagall for tech companies would be a bad idea, why a Glass-Steagall for tech would harm consumers. And let me just make a thesis statement on this particular point. Taking away platform owners' ability to compete on their own platform will not help competition. The only thing it will do is potentially, if the right agreements and deals can't be worked out, weaken and, if not cripple, the functionality of the devices we've come to love so much. Now, why won't it help competition? Because there's already a choice. Because there is already a, and I have never met one person in my life, and I work with a lot of people, I've never met one person in my life who has said something like, well, yeah, I really would prefer Spotify, but man, Apple Music's already on here, so I'm just going to subscribe to it. No one ever says that. If they want Spotify, they get Spotify. If they want Google Gmail, they get Gmail. If they want Amazon Kindle instead of Apple Books, they get Amazon Kindle instead of Apple Books. So you're not giving to the third-party companies, the so-called competition, you're not giving them anything that they don't already have. But what you're taking away is the built-in functionality that makes it possible that I don't have to hunt for other apps and services just to perform basic tasks. As I said to you earlier, we have become pretty reliant on some of this stuff. And the fact that it is a first-party app ensures that it is deeply integrated with all of its features right out of the gate. I don't have to wait. If Apple creates a service like iCloud, I know their calendar, email, contacts, notes, reminders, music, photos, documents, books, apps, videos, all of the TV shows, all these different things and a whole lot more will work with iCloud. Deep integration and continuity is possible in third-party apps, but it takes third-party developers some time. And with first-party apps, it's already there. And this is important for users because, my friends, users don't have infinite amounts of time to dedicate to this stuff. It's the same thing with accessibility. If you don't have a built-in screen reader, you have nothing if you can't see. Where are you going to go to get that? You shouldn't have to hunt for that kind of stuff. And I'm not saying you're threatening that, but I'm just giving you examples. Do you know what else? These apps are guaranteed. These first-party apps are guaranteed to work with every update. So I got a third-party calendar. I got a third-party book app. I got a third-party music app. I got a third-party movie app. And I got a third-party email app. iOS whatever number comes out. Okay, it doesn't matter. And I go to install it. Day one. And all of a sudden, my book app isn't turning pages. My email app crashes every time I go to send. And my calendar app thinks that the day of the week starts on Tuesday. I contact the developers of said apps, and they say to me, "We apologize. We are working on it." Now, let me show you a different story. I use Apple Calendar, Apple Books, Apple Music, Apple TV app, and Apple Mail. When Apple releases iOS whatever, they've already ensured that iOS whatever works with Apple Calendar so that it knows the first day of the week is Sunday. Apple Mail, so that it can do a great job of sending email every time. Apple Books, so that when I turn a page, I don't get a blank screen, but I get the next page of that page-turning thriller. You get the picture. This happens because third-party apps are able to be included. Now, I know maybe you're not talking about the already included apps that are free. Maybe you're talking about apps that you have to download competitive. I know there's fine lines here, but my friends, it's unnecessary. Either way, you look at it, it's not going to help. It's only going to potentially hurt. Do you know that the tile company never said a whole lot about Apple's location-based privacy until the rumor began swirling around that Apple might be making a Tile competitor? Why does Tile suddenly find issue with a feature they've known about for a while? Could it be because when Apple makes a product, an app, or a feature, it is almost always the best in the industry at what it does? I submit to you that that's exactly the reason. Tile was not being harmed by anti-competitive practices and privacy policies. Tile was scared. And what did Apple do? Apple made changes to allow the location settings to be modified in a more convenient way that should have been more suitable to Tile. And do you know that the longer it has taken the alleged Apple tag, which we don't even know for sure is real because Apple has never announced it, do you know that the longer it's taken for that thing to come to fruition, the quieter Tile has been? Is it really wrong for Apple to make a product that competes? Because a minute ago, you're telling me that competition is so important. Are you now going to restrict Apple the way you believe they are restricting these third-party companies? Seems a little bit like telling Tiger Woods, "Hey, buddy, You can't play golf anymore because you're so good at it, no one else will have a chance. And that, of course, is ridiculous. But I believe that is exactly what we're seeing being pushed for in this day and age. No, my friends, Apple, Google, Amazon, they did not get where they are today because of anti-competitive practices. They got where they are today because their products, their services are great. Look at the customer satisfaction rating rates, okay? They got where they are because they make a terrific product. You know I love Apple. I've said before, if Apple made a toothpaste or a lunch meat, I would buy it. A lot of things about Google I don't like as much as their Apple equivalents, and I don't agree with some of what Google does, but I have to give credit where credit is due. Google makes good products too. And people love their Google apps, and people love their Apple apps. And some people use Apple apps on Google devices, and some people use Google apps on Apple devices. And some people, of course, stick with the first-party apps. But you know what? Let me be clear. The iPhone came out, and then Android. Why am I bringing that up? Because Google is a perfect example of how Apple does not crush the competition. And so, again, let us try to keep things in perspective when we talk about this stuff. I am deeply, deeply grateful to those like Congressman Cicilline who have made it their life's work, or at least part of their life's work. They have dedicated themselves to ensuring the protection of consumers. I have the utmost respect and appreciation for them. But I believe it to be, in this case, that the government has been misled by companies that are trying to elicit sympathy for themselves or for consumers who didn't even ask for it. And so what I would urge you to do are several things. First of all, to not make any immediate recommendations until you've had a chance to rethink this thing a little bit. And until you've had a chance to involve, my second point, involve more consumers and more constituents. Do not just talk to Apple, Google, Facebook, and Amazon, and then the companies who have complaints about those companies. Rather, remember, it's often the case that there's his side, her side, and the truth. Bring the people in it who are going to tell you the truth, the consumers, the folks who realize they can choose from millions of apps, many of them from small developers. They can easily switch apps. They can easily delete first-party apps, and that they have the freedom, but with a level of excellence, security, privacy, and convenience built in that has never before been heard of. These sort of open platforms that don't do this will never be able to achieve that. It is not possible to rip the rug out from under these practices without losing a significant portion of those current guarantees that ensure and maintain the level of excellence and mitigate the bad actors and the problems that we could potentially have. And so that brings me to my next point. Please, I urge you, include tech companies in your discussions when making laws. If you do decide that laws and bills and recommendations are necessary, include tech companies so that you can seek a way that does indeed allow the tech companies to compete on their own platforms, because they should. Why do you want to stifle their competition? They're going to be the best at it because they are the ones who make the hardware. And as Alan Kay said, people who are serious about software should make their own hardware. So seek a solution that does allow them to continue competing. If that means lowering the in-app purchase, percentage I'm not in favor of that, but it would be 1,000% better than what's being talked about now. Seek that solution. And secondly, seek a solution that allows the tech companies to still maintain the level of control and the level of excellence, the high bar that they have, without putting consumers at risk by removing it. Talk to the tech companies about what you are thinking and allow them to counter with options that still satisfy you, but that still allow for the things we not only love, but we need about the app stores. My friends, our kids, my son, 13 years old, my daughter of 8, friends of mine whose kids are 2 and 4 and 7, folks like myself who cannot see, who rely on accessibility, my parents in their 70s, all those people and more are counting on you to ensure that the recommendations you make, if any, do not remove the protections that we have, that we need, that do not put us at risk of using apps that are malicious, that potentially have viruses and privacy risks and security risks without easy hope of canceling or getting a refund, that do not require us to have to deal with complicated red tape, cancellation policies, or parental controls, but that allow for a simple, immediate, instant resolve through one company who has our back. And my friends, Apple really does have our back. I believe that with everything in me, or I would not be doing what I'm doing right now. There's no company out there in this world that I would rather put my trust in than Apple. In conclusion, it is my strong belief and my very real fear that if the government decides to proceed with what they're currently thinking and to push for and lobby for either open platforms or forcing companies who own platforms not to compete on them, I believe the results, the consequences for consumers, for children, for minorities, and more could be disastrous without providing the sought-after remedies for everyone else. You do not increase competition and innovation by stifling someone else's. And Apple, Google, and the like have not stifled, but rather have promoted, encouraged, fostered, and even helped to create an environment where this innovation and this competition thrives and is possible. Never once in my life have I felt under the forceful thumb of Apple, but I have felt such a freedom to be able to get any app that I want on any subject, in any category, from any developer with a consistent interface and with a peace of knowing that someone's got my back should I need it. Now here is your call to action, my friends. If you agree with me on what I'm talking about today and you value the system as it is and the benefits that it provides to consumers and to developers alike, this is what I need you to do. I need you to start contacting your congressman immediately. Do not wait. Remember, the gentleman plans to possibly make recommendations as early as next month. We don't have time to wait. I want you to listen to the rest of this podcast, and then I want you to get on the phone, get in that email app, and I want to send emails and phone calls to every congressman in every district and every legislator to let them know we are not okay with these platforms being changed. It has to be now. We have got to act on this, my friends. We don't have time to wait, and we can't afford it. I don't want you to be mean. I have no negative feelings towards Congressman Cicilline. And sir, if you're listening to this, You are a hero. I appreciate what you are doing, and may God bless you, and I mean that with everything in me. You are not a bad person. The guy is not a bad person, and anybody who supports him is not a bad person, my friends. So we're not going to make threats. We're not going to be disrespectful. We're not going to bully anybody here, okay? Because we know they're genuinely looking out for us. We know they have our interests at heart. We know they're trying to do the best job, what they believe is the right thing to do. But we need to express to them that you can be a hero and still sometimes be wrong. And in this instance, I know of no other way to put it. They're wrong. It would not help. It would be a mistake. Companies like Apple are not using anti-competitive tactics. You're hearing a one-sided argument from companies who feel that something has been taken away from them, when in reality, either it hasn't, or it's been because there was a clear violation which doesn't deserve an exception. Apple can't make random exceptions for random people. They've got to have clear policies. And if those policies require changing, then Apple will do it. Let's have a conversation if you think 30% is too high. Let's sit down with these so-called tech giants and try to find some common ground. But let's not disrupt what is working for consumers and developers alike. My friends, I thank you for your time. I thank you for listening. And I thank you in advance for letting your voices be heard to the right people in the right timing so that we can stop a disaster from occurring. Until next time, this has been Matt Volbrecht of the Tech Juggernaut at ttjtech.net. If you've not done so, please subscribe to the blog. If you want copies of the presentation I've shared and the talking points in either Apple Keynote or PDF documents, please get in touch with me by sending a message to thetechjuggernaut@icloud.com. That is thetechjuggernaut@icloud.com. I want to thank you again so much, my friends, for tuning in and for what I know you're going to do to help to be the solution to this problem. God bless you all, and we'll see you next time on TTJ Talk.